Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and oh my goodness, we've got so much to share with you today, and I'm so delighted that we're going to have a guest that's going to give us a taste of some fascinating football history. The timing is perfect. We've got the Super Bowl coming up, and what better to talk about than someone who is renowned in the history books of football, but also it's a story about a Native American that, well, he's quite an enigma. He's got a fascinating background. Who are we talking about? We're going to be talking about the life of Lone Star Dietz, and my guest is Tom Benjay. And, Tom, you are in Florida, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we kind of escaped. We normally live just outside Carlisle, PA, but we came down to Florida to escape the cold for a bit.
Uh-huh. Gee, that sounds like a good idea. When you can sit with the palm trees and the glorious sunshine instead of freezing ice and snow, always is a good thing. Tom, you have produced here this book, Keep A-Going, The Life of Lone Star Dietz. Now, am I pronouncing his name correctly? It's D-I-E-T-Z?
Yes, that is correct.
This must have taken you a long time to get done. I love your photos in here, the art. And there's this one photo right at the first of the book where he is in his full Indian dress regalia. And it is just an awesome, awesome photograph. What caused you to get interested in this unique man?
Well, it's all my wife's fault.
Oh, come on now. Let's stop blaming the spouse.
Several years ago, we went to a talk at the Cumberland County Historical Society there in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, about the Carlisle Indian School, because we both have some interest in finding out more about it. And midway through the talk, Barb Landis, the woman making the presentation, started listing off people who had been at the school and what they did afterwards. And midway through the talk, she got to Lone Star Dietz and mentioned that when he left Carlisle, that he went to Washington State and led the team as their head football coach, and led the team to victory in the first Rose Bowl in 1916. The woman sitting next to me got quite indignant and said, "Oh no, Michigan won the first Rose Bowl in 1902." So when we went home, I got on the internet and did a little searching, and quickly found the answer to the Rose Bowl question. And that the answer to that question is, it depends on what you mean by the first Rose Bowl.
Ah.
But I stumbled across a little information about Dietz, and he was just a fascinating guy. And as I started looking into him, I found there was no biography of him written. And I just slowly started on the project, and before you know it, I was immersed in it.
Now, when you started doing the research on it, what was the first thing that grabbed your mind where you said, I've got to do this? And do you write for a living, Tom? Is this what you do?
Well, I guess you might say I do now. However, if I was relying on the income from it to date, I would be starving. But I guess you would say I'm retired, a retired computer geek.
Uh-huh. Now, let's give our audience a little bit of information about William Dietz, because depending on where they are in the country, if they're like me, of a later generation, you're going to say, duh, who is this guy? Well, those people in Washington State who are avid football fanatics, and they, believe me, there is a plethora of them here, they just know so much about these various coaches in the history, and he's very much loved in the state of Washington. He's got a lot of people that really revere his history of accomplishment. But let's go back to the beginning. He was born on August 16th, 1885. He died on July 20th, 1964. This is a man whose life you never in a million years would think that would follow the patterning it did. And sometimes he was a serious victim of politics and of his own ignorance to a degree. And then there's this other side of him that's so talented. What a wonderful artist he was. I was just so impressed with the multi-talented individual that you brought to life in this wonderful book, Keep A Going, The Life of Lone Star Dietz. Now, tell us a little bit about his background, his association with the Chippewa, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Let's find out about this man that so many of us know nothing about.
Okay. Well, the first thing I want to tell you is about half of what you find written on him is wrong, including the gravestone that put his date of birth at 1885. It's generally thought that he was born in 1884, but the gravestone was produced after both he and his second wife died, so the people making the gravestone were guessing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's believed that he was born in August of 1884, and he was raised in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, by William Wallace Dietz and Leanna Ginter Dietz. And his father had been sheriff a number of times, and was, when Dietz was a teenager, was involved in the insurance business, and was politically connected. So he came from a relatively prominent family in the town. His father and the newspaper publisher were political friends, so whenever the Dietzes would host a social event, it would make the paper. But at about age 15, Dietz came home when his parents didn't realize he'd come, walked in, and overheard them having a fight. Apparently, they had a tumultuous marriage and eventually divorced. And the woman he always thought was his mother, the woman who raised him, let the cat out of the bag that he wasn't really her son. And that kind of caused things to click into place for Dietz, because his parents were, his father's German, German-American, so mm-hmm. he was fair. Well, Dietz was very dark. His hair was almost coal black. And he got kidded, not kidded, actually, at that time it wasn't kidding, it was taunting almost by the other children, because to them he looked like an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt him, because at that time it was not an advantage to be considered to be an Indian in this country, especially out on a near frontier area where people, where their parents and especially the grandparents, could remember the Indian Wars quite clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So Dietz often played with the Chippewa children that were around. There were some Sioux, some Chippewa in the vicinity, because it was in a wooded area. Rice Lake, Wisconsin was in a wooded area. But after he found out that his mother may have been Indian, sometime after that, he disappeared, because all the records of the school just have his attendance stopping at the end of his junior year of high school. And I found no record of him anywhere, and hopefully something will show up eventually. From June of 1901 to September of 1902, there's a whole school year where he just vanished. But in the fall of 1902, he reappears at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, where his mother enrolled him in the academy, which was basically for his senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed at McAllister 2 years. He finished high school, went his first year of college. He illustrated McAllister publications. and he played football there. He also, in later days, said that he felt discriminated at McAllister as well as he had growing up. And it, so I don't know what he did during that year, but he was probably searching for his roots.
Well, there's so much about the man that's so interesting. You have some wonderful stories in here. One is about a woman, Angel DeCoro, whom he eventually married. And she was older than he was, but she was an exquisite artist herself. And he had two loves, football and art. And he was involved with both of them through most of his life. And you have one story because Lone Star Dietz, he got the name Lone Star in a very unusual way, and it was with a special association with a man called One Star, and I believe he was Sue. Am I correct?
Yes. After the St. Louis World's Fair, after leaving McAllister, Dietz got a job doing artwork in the Model Government Indian School exhibit at the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904. And at the fair, he met an Oglala Sioux warrior who was getting upper, he wasn't elderly quite, but he was a mature person at that time, a man named One Star. And One Star bonded with Dietz and claimed him as his nephew from then on and gave Dietz his name. Now, of course, he didn't give Dietz his English name. He gave Dietz his Lakota name, mm-hmm. which I cannot pronounce properly, so I won't try. But he gave it to Dietz, and there was an elaborate naming ceremony where he would give Dietz various articles of his clothing until he had basically completely dressed Dietz in his own clothing. And the clothing was very artistic, and the name was included in symbols in it, like there's a stylized star
mm-hmm.
in the pattern on the clothing. Okay. So Dietz was able to find a more accurate translation of the Lakota name to English, which is Lone Star. A government Indian agent who probably wasn't very knowledgeable about Lakota had earlier translated it to One Star.
Now, here we have Dietz. This is a young man. He has a natural acumen for football. He was able to participate in the Carlisle, Minnesota game in 1907. You have our official lineup cards here. But what's so interesting is that he knew Jim Thorpe. He knew Pop Warner. And not only was he involved with those well-known names in the sports world, but he also did artwork for the Smithsonian Institution. He got into silversmithing. He even got into making movies. I mean, this guy was just incredible. He had this awesome life. Football, though, was going to end up being a blessing for him in some respects, and in other respects, it was really going to be a downer for him. Tell us how football was such a positive for him, and then what happened that threw him backwards into a very dark period with the game of football.
Okay. My theory on this, because it's not, there's no evidence to support exactly how it happened, but at the St. Louis World's Fair, Angel DeCora and Dietz met. She was the first probably non-white to graduate from a Seven Sisters institution. She graduated from Smith College. And she and Dietz met at the St. Louis World's Fair. But Dietz was, she was 13 years older than Dietz and very well known in the art world. She was an established artist, an excellent artist. And Dietz was in no situation to really woo her. He had no significant income at the time. But 3 years later, in September of 1907, and there's no documentation of how this came about, but Dietz appears at Carlisle as an art student studying under Decorah and a football player to play under Pop Warner. The first 2 years, Dietz didn't, in his words, he didn't make the team the first 2 years. From what I've gathered, he was on the team, but was not playing on the varsity. But he was practicing and participating probably in junior varsity games, those sorts of things. But those were not well documented. In 1907, the team played the University of Minnesota. And that lineup card, I think, was a little trick on the part of Pop Warner. I think he put Dietz's name in the lineup card because Dietz was known in St. Paul, Minnesota, in Minneapolis, where the game was played. And Warner did that to help increase the attendance. Because the newspaper, the official lineup card, Dietz's name wasn't in, and his name wasn't mentioned in any of the newspaper accounts of the game. But I think that was just a little trick on Warner's part. But over the years, Dietz and Warner became friends, and after Dietz quit playing, 1911 was his last season to play, so in 1912, 13, and 14, Dietz assisted Pop Warner, and was a student of the game as well as just helping him. And in 1915, Dietz went on his own as a head coach at Washington State. That job was available because Washington State had not been doing well for several years prior to that. And Pop Warner was one of the premier coaches in the country. There at the Carlisle Indian School, he developed the single and double wing offenses, which was just a wide open, high-powered offense for the time. And Dietz knew it as well as anyone. Dietz came out to Washington State, took this previously losing team to an undefeated season, and for a reward, if you will, the team was invited to come down to Pasadena on New Year's Day. What had happened, there in Pasadena, they had this little floral parade on New Year's morning each year. And they were looking for a new an event to have after the parade. They had been having things like chariot races, donkey polo games, all sorts of odds and ends like that. But the chariot races had gotten rigged and were dangerous. So they decided to try football for 1916. The promoters decided to have it a West versus East affair, that they would find a team for the West Coast to defend the honor of the West against an Eastern invader. Both Washington and Washington State were undefeated that year, but didn't play each other because the previous year, Gil Dolby, who was the coach, he's a legendary coach at the University of Washington, refused to play Washington State. He said it was too much like kindergarten because he'd beaten them so badly. Well, once the word got out that Washington State was going to be invited to Pasadena to play, Dolby started lobbying to have Washington attend the game. But the promoters of the game looked at Dietz and looked at Dolby. Here, Dietz was a colorful, bigger-than-life character would help with box office, where Dolby was such a miserable cuss that even though his teams at Washington were going undefeated, the alumni would come to the games and sit in the stands, cheer for the other team, and throw peanuts at Dolby. That gives you some idea of how miserable he was. For the game on New Year's Day, the program is shaped like a football, and in it there's one page devoted to the coaches. It has a write-up of each coach, and it has two photos in it. Well, the interesting thing is both of the photos are of Dietz. One of them is in a top hat and tails. The other is in his Sioux regalia. Because Dietz was a bit of a dandy. He liked to dress up. And when he first arrived in the Palouse, that took people aback a bit because they weren't used to seeing an Indian dandy. Well, his team arrived in Pasadena after a three-day train ride. And when they got there, they set up headquarters in the Maryland Hotel, and Lone Star had a surprise for his team. He had negotiated a movie deal for them. They would be playing the football team in a movie called Tom Brown at Harvard, and they were going to each get paid $100 for being in that movie, which in 1915, $100 was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they, but later on, the players figured out that Dietz hoodwinked them because for that $100, he got two-a-day practices out of the players. Because on the movie, they're shooting outdoors. So when the, you know, there's a lot of hurry up and wait in the movie business. And during the wait period, he would have them practice. So he got two-a-day practices out of them for the $100.
Well, that tells me this man was not only a thinker, but he was also someone that was able to extract out of his players the best. And people would play their heart out for him. And when you read his story in the book, and it's so well laid out, you've got these wonderful photographs of all of the interaction that he was involved with, his artwork, which I think is just exceptionally fine. He was extremely talented, but he did all kinds of things. He did programs for games. He was involved with ad agencies. He was a man that never looked at life as something that you were just to wait around for it to bring something to you. He always stepped up to the plate and was willing to stand true for what he really loved. And if the football arena wasn't working so hot, then he would shift over to the painting. Now, I know that he had quite an eventful life, and I know we don't have a whole bunch more time to be able to discuss it. But for those of you who are listening, if you're avid football fans, if you know of someone who just loves the game, this book has so much wonderful history in it. But more than that, Dietz is a man who has so many sides to himself that Tom Benjay, my guest, has been able to research and share. It makes for marvelous reading. On the cover of the book, you have exactly what you were describing in that program. The program itself, the way it was written up, and then the photo of Dietz dressed in his Sioux regalia and also dressed in his tails and top hat with his snappy-looking presence. It's just great. This man ended up battling cancer in the latter part of his life. He ended up broke, but he wasn't unhappy, was he?
No, that's one of the things that came out of it. I was able to talk to some of his former players that played for him at his last coaching stop, so some of them are still alive. And they said that even when he was broke, he would come and chat with them, and every time they would see him, he had some new idea. He was broke and down on his luck, but he wasn't defeated.
And it is such a wonderful, wonderful story. And in your book, you talk towards the end about a family who has wonderful, wonderful memories of Lone Star, and they honor him, and it is passed along to the children in the family because he had such a profound effect on some of the older members of the family. But I think more than anything else, it's a story about a man who, regardless of the obstacles that were presented to him, did what he loved, was passionate about it, passed that passion and that level of expectation of excellence along to everyone that he interacted with. Now, Tom, this book, do you have a website about Lone Star?
Yes, it's www.lonestardietz.com.
And Dietz is spelled D-I-E-T-Z.
That's correct.
And people can go in there, find out all kinds of information on him. And again, if you have someone that is an avid football lover, they really like getting into the bare bones, well, this is one of the best coaches that has been around. His life story is compelling. You see the history of the earlier part of the 20th century. A lot of the things that we don't think of twice about today. But in his time, it was important. You get a picture of politics. You get a picture of the game itself. You also get an insight into the Rose Parade, which is one of the biggest events in the U.S. and has millions and millions of viewers around the world every year. And it's fascinating stuff. Tom, would you like to close out with a thought regarding Lone Star before we close out our interview today?
Well, it's just he was a fascinating man, and I'm continuing to learn things about him. Just today, I found in an old newspaper file that I hadn't uncovered before a trick play that he ran in the 1930s called the Dead Indian Play. And it was good for making fooling the opposition and making touchdowns. So one of the things about for me on this, one of the things that I get out of it, is I'm always learning something new and surprising.
Well, and that's the joy of life. Keep it going. The Life of Lone Star Deeps by Tom Benjey. And Benjey's last name is spelled B-E-N-J-E-Y. And Deeps is spelled D-I-E-T-Z. If you're like me and you knew nothing about this coach, this is something that is fascinating reading. Keep it going. The Life of Lone Star Deeps by Tom Benjey. Tom, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away now. I've got more good things to share, plus some emails from some of you. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and our telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to do that. Here in the United States, it's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. From Canada, you can call in toll-free. The telephone number is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And I want to thank those of you that have been sending emails to me. I've gotten some wonderful things from you. And I have to apologize. I've been sort of slow in responding because we've been having some glitches with our computer. We've had these funny little gremlins. I think I brought them back from Alaska. Anyway, they decided they were going to lodge in our computer frame, and so now we, I think, have eradicated them. So I'm going to be able to respond to some of you. And I just love some of the material that I've received, so I'm going to be sharing that on the air. And by the way, I've got to do this one. A delightful lady named Deborah sent me this cute little joke about football, of course, with the football, the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. I thought this was very appropriate. And it's all about a guy who takes his girlfriend to her very first football game. And they had great seats right behind the team's bench. Oh, it's just wonderful. And after the game, he asked her how she liked the experience. Well, her response was, "Ooh, I really liked it, especially the tight pants and all the big muscles. But I just couldn't understand why they were killing each other over 25 cents. Well, he was flabbergasted. He just couldn't understand this. He said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, they flipped a coin. One team got it, and then for the rest of the game, all they kept screaming was, 'Get the quarterback! Get the quarterback!' Like, hello, it's only 25 cents. I know, I got a kick out of it. I'm not a football buff, but I could just see that. So anyway, that's a little goodie there. Also, you know, yesterday I'd given a tip on a snack for, you know, a big party because so many of you are going to be having a big to-do. Well, I got an email from someone. Believe it or not, this is an email from Bangkok, Thailand. Yes, so we have a listener in Thailand. And he said, "Here is a white salsa for tortilla chips." And I thought, well, I will share that with you. So get your pad of paper and pen handy so you can write it down. It's actually quite easy, and it's just great for tips. All kinds of good things, and so I'll be sharing that with you in just a little bit. People are so innovative, and again, if you want to give me a call, I'll be delighted to give you a reading on air, 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. People are so resourceful, and there was this group that did something from Evergreen State College, and this is in the state of Washington. I reside in the state of Washington. And I thought, this is really smart. And I wanted to share it with you because I think sometimes we're not aware of the way certain conditions can work for us to achieve what we want to achieve. Now, this relates to using prisoners for work. And all of us, if we've done any kind of history reading, are aware of chain gangs and the prisoners, how they used to be made to work on roads and so on and so forth. Well, some things have shifted relative to this. Now they are utilizing prisoners to become involved in science. Now, Nalini Nadkarni, she's a forest ecologist at Evergreen State College, she decided she was going to recruit inmates from a local prison here in the Pacific Northwest. It's called the Cedar Creek Correction Center in Little Rock, Washington, to get their aid and assistance in conducting experiments on how to cultivate moss. Now, she started this in 2004, and she said the results they're getting are the first step towards the commercial cultivation of mosses, which is a green alternative to the current practice of collecting it from the forest floor. Now, here's something that I found extremely interesting. You might be listening to this and say, "Donna, give me a break. You're talking about moss. Big deal." Let me tell you, it's a big business. Why? Because the U.S. floral industry alone, all by itself, consumes up to 81 million dry pounds, 81 million dry pounds of moss. And that was in 2004, and it's probably gone up since then. It's just absolutely amazing. 81 million pounds. I mean, isn't that something? Well, she felt that doing something in the way of research with prisoners just was a natural fit. And she said she had a lot of know-how about how to grow it, but she was too busy doing what she's doing to watch moss grow. Now, the people in prison often don't have enough stimulation. They have plenty of time And so she said, what I did is I picked the four most common types of mosses, and we set up some basic experiments. We wanted to know which species grew the fastest, how we should water them, should we grow them in flats or hanging in the air. And what she did was, I think, quite intelligent, because it challenged the prisoners. She gave the prisoners data books and some basic training and measurement protocol and just told them, go to work. And she now has a graduate student who is analyzing the data that has been secured by these prisoners and is preparing them for publication. Now, there were 36 men who volunteered to do the greenhouse duty, and one inmate out of that 36 went on to study horticulture before he was released, so he'd have something to do after he got out of prison. She said he absolutely was thrilled about the opportunity to do this with her. It had not been in his experience before. And she said he feels like he has something to contribute now, something to contribute to science. Now, what she wants to do is work towards finding funding to continue and expand her special program to more prisons and actually involving some other areas of scientific research. She said it's really about bringing scientists who have questions together with an audience who can help them out. And one of the best things I think we can ever do for anyone is to stimulate their curiosity. And I have a photo of an inmate who is working with botanical materials to identify moss as part of a forest conservation research project. In our world today, we're looking at how we can take care of what we've got. You know, we've gone through this cycle where, gee, we think everything's going to stay with us forever, and we've been totally unaware, I shouldn't say totally, but in general, the average person has been unaware of how everything connects. So as we as individuals have become educated by those that have had the time to observe and know and understand, we realize that we're all interconnected, and we've got to take care of this earth of ours. So this is one particular woman who had an idea, has put it to work, is giving purpose to the lives of individuals who are willing to learn. They all have to volunteer for this. And it's a win-win on all sides. I think that's pretty cool. So I wanted to share that with you today because I think that that is absolutely marvelous to know that one person can make a difference. You know what? I think it's so fascinating when we come across stories like this, one person having an idea, that idea ripples out when you share it with someone else, and the can-do attitude makes things happen. One person makes a difference. I still am blown away. 81 million dry pounds of moss. Who would have imagined that? But there's a lot of things we don't realize that requires a tremendous volume. We are having to learn how to grow things differently, how to do things differently. It's really pretty cool. Every day, there's something new you can learn. You know, you ought to get up with an attitude, excited about every day, because you don't know what wonderful nugget, golden nugget of wisdom you're going to be able to find. Speaking of golden nuggets, I am going to be sending out my newsletter today and also tomorrow. So if you would like to get a free copy, pop an email address to me at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. Also, if you have recipes, special, you know, things that you want me to know about, go ahead and send me an email. I'm always happy to hear from you. And speaking of emails, I said I had this recipe, and if you've got that pad of paper and pen handy, this is how simple it is. This is a white salsa for tortilla chips. Actually, it could go with vegetables, too, whatever you would like. So how about a cup of sour cream, one cup of sour cream, and if you want to use the non-fats, you can do that, too. It's no biggie. One cup of sour cream, a cup of mayonnaise, one cup of mayonnaise, and again, for those of you that are watching the calories, use the no-fat, low-fat, whatever you prefer. You need juice from three limes, you want four cloves of garlic, and you want to crush them really fine. Four cloves of garlic. You need 1.5 cups of finely chopped cilantro, 1.5 cups of finely chopped cilantro, and you want to be sure that you use fresh if possible because it really will make a difference. You can use dried, but fresh is fine, is the best. 6-ounce can of black olives. You want those pitted, of course. You want to drain them and chop them up nice. And you can make it chunky or fine, whatever is your preference. The 6-ounce can of black olives. And then you need 1.5 cups of green onions, finely chopped. 1.5 cups of green onions, finely chopped. 5 teaspoons of hot pepper sauce. 5 teaspoons, yes, full teaspoons of hot pepper sauce. And you may want to add a little bit of pepper to taste. If you want to use black, that'll add a little color. If you want to use white pepper, that'll just blend in with this white salsa. Now, this is all you do. You take a medium bowl, you combine your mayonnaise, sour cream, and you mix it thoroughly. Then you add your lime juice, your garlic, your cilantro, your black olives, your scallions, your hot pepper sauce, salt, and pepper. Now, you may want to taste this and adjust your seasonings for your own personal preference. And hey, if you don't like a lot of salsa, you don't have to put in 5 teaspoons. You can put in 1 or 2, whatever your preference is. And that's something, if you're not someone that's really into hot and spicy, you may just want to add 1 teaspoon at a time and taste it as you go along. Now, you need to refrigerate this for about 2 hours before serving, and that way the flavors are going to mellow together. Serve it with chips or with vegetables, but I'll tell you what, this is something even good to put on a hot baked potato. So also what I was sent along was some suggestions. You want to place 1 or 2 different types of appetizers if you're having a big party this weekend on each serving tray. And you want to remember, you don't want to have a whole bunch of different things on one tray because the eye sometimes gets tricked by that and your guests may have a hard time figuring out what they want to have. So make sure you keep things put a group together according to whatever they are and have plenty of receptacles for paper plates. If you're using toothpicks, like if you're using, you know, the, there's those wonderful crispy, call them chestnuts, and bacon. A lot of people like to serve that as an appetizer. Well, you don't want to have untidy piles of toothpicks and pits or shrimp tails throughout all over the place. Make sure you got a lot of receptacles for that. And just, you know, just have fun. Have everything prepared so you can enjoy your guests, whatever you're doing. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute, and phone lines are open if you want to call. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. And if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to chat with you. If you're in the U.S., all you have to do is pick up the phone and call 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also in Canada, 888-810-8322. That's the phone number for Canadians to call in, 888-810-8322. Now, I'm wanting to also let you know, if you're listening and you're in the state of Washington, the Northwest Women's Show. I'm going to be participating in that wonderful event. I've been doing it for a few years. It has just been awesome. If ever you want to be overwhelmed with like 30 or 40,000 women in one spot, this is the event of the year to attend. And it's in Seattle, and I'll be there the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th. I will be speaking, and I also will be available to meet with people in person. So if you'd like more information, check my newsletter, which is going to be coming up in the next day or two, and then you'll be able to have all the details on it. So all of that will be available for you to make note of. It's just a fabulous, fabulous event. And you guys, believe it or not, you may think, who'd want to be around that many women? Trust me, There's a lot going on. It's a good place to be. It really is. Now, I wanted to share some information, some health information with you. I talked with so many different people, and health is something we all want. We all want to be vibrant and well, and sometimes life can smack us down with ailments that we don't know are going to even affect us. And as we say so often, life happens. So I wanted to share with you some information about brain tumors. And the reasons that I wanted to share this information is that I had a client that I was talking with, and a member of their family started going through some particular conditions. And when I came across this information, I thought, this has to be shared. The more we can share knowledge, the better off we all are as individuals. Because when we can share, when we become aware, then it allows us to empower others with that knowledge. And that's what I like to think the Donna Sebo Show is all about, empowering you with insight and understanding into so many different levels of life. Now, there are so many different ways a brain tumor can affect someone, and there's a lot of symptoms that can bring an awareness to the fact that there is something going on neurologically and one needs to see a doctor. The first one is seizures, with no history of seizure with a person before. And that is what happened to this member of my client's family. This particular person in their family began having these little seizures, and then it became more severe. And it took quite a while before they were able to determine that it was actually coming from a deep area within the brain. So this is why you just need to pay attention to certain things. Headaches. Often people have severe headaches, and they are very, very bad in the morning. If they have those headaches, they have unexplained nausea and vomiting. Also, if they can have a change in their speech, their vision, and their hearing, sometimes that is also indicative of a stroke. Dizziness, problems with balance or walking, weakness or loss of sensation in the hands, the arms, the feet, or the legs. Sometimes changes in mood and personality, the ability to concentrate. Now, this can fit a number of different conditions, but often they are collectively together, and usually the symptoms develop over a period of time, and there is a need to find a good neurologist, and they typically try to do a trace to find out where these problems originate from. And in our world today, especially in the last 15 years, there's been an incredible advancement in the understanding of physicians about brain function. And believe me, we've just scratched the surface. There's so much about the human body that we are still learning about. And there is technology available today to treat brain tumors. It was not available before. There's improved diagnostic imaging, there's surgical techniques and new equipment, as I said, that really can make a difference. And there is an invasive computer-assisted surgery that they have been able to utilize at this point that actually can pinpoint areas in the brain with such an absolute accuracy that they don't have to destroy tissue around it. They can actually get to the tumor and zap it, as well as sometimes, depending on where it's located, go at it systematically so that eventually it can be destroyed. And they have what they call the gamma knife technology, and this is involving focusing 201 beams of radiation upon a computer mapped target in the brain. No incision has to be made with this. And it just is amazing how when they're able to do these surgeries, patients are able to go back into normal activity within just a few hours. So there's so much going on. The internet is a wonderful resource to utilize. But if you don't have a lot of time, don't hesitate to ask a friend maybe to do some research for you if you're wanting to find out information. We have so much that is developing and occurring in the medical arena of knowledge, it's almost impossible for physicians to keep up with it. So you as a consumer need to be aware that you're the one that's going to have to do more and more of this research and be willing to ask your friends to help you. Ask people who like to sit and do that kind of thing on the Internet. Some people don't, but there are people that just absolutely love it. Of course, all of you who listen to this show, you're really computer involved. You love it. So this is something that I think is great, and when you have those resources available to you, why not use them? This is Donna Sebo, and we have open lines at 877-876-5227, and from Canada, 888-810-8322. Now, I received an email from Gail, and it has to do with George Carlin's views on aging, and I thought this was cute, so I wanted to share it with you today. And this is what he says. He said, do you realize that the only time in our lives when we get to be old is when we're kids? If you're less than 10 years old, you're so excited about aging that you think in fractions. How old are you? I'm 4 and a half. You're never 36 and a half. You're 4 and a half going on 5. That's the key. You get into your teens. Now they can't hold you back. You jump to the next number or even a few ahead. You remember when you did that? Instead of saying you were 16, you were 17 or 18. How old are you? I'm going to be 16. You could be 13, but hey, you're going to be 16. Then, the greatest day of your life, you become 21. Even the words sound like a ceremony. You become 21. That's such a magical number. And then you turn 30. Uh-oh, what happened there? Makes you sound like bad milk. He turned. We had to throw him out. That's no fun now. You're just a sour dumpling. What's wrong? What's changed? When you become 21, you turn 30, and then you're pushing 40. Whoa. Put on the brakes. It's all slipping away. Before you know it, you reach 50. And then your dreams are gone. But wait. You make it to 60. You didn't think you would. So then you become 21, turn 30, push 40, reach 50, and make it to 60. You've built up so much speed that you hit 70. After that, it's a day-by-day thing. You hit Wednesday. You get into your 80s, and every day is a complete cycle. You hit lunch. You turn 4:30. You reach bedtime. And it doesn't end there. Into the 90s, you start going backwards. I was just 92. Then a strange thing happens. If you make it over 100, you become a little kid again. I'm 100 and a half. Oh, anyway, all of us have our agendas, and all of us get caught up with age, don't we? And yet every age has its wonderful gifts to enjoy and to be given to us. If only, we will recognize that every day is a gift, and in receiving that gift, we give it the best we've got, and we accept the best of life. How are you going to lose with that kind of a wonderful opportunity? You can't. So I'd just like to close out the show today by saying, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is a marvelous day to be living. You've got so many great things that are going to be happening to you. Have an attitude like that of a child. I wonder what wonderful gifts will be given to me today. If you have that kind of attitude, you'll never be a loser. This is Donna Sebo. We've run out of time. We're going to be back tomorrow talking about the beauty and the beast. What is the beast? PMS. Pauline Houlet is going to be my guest, and we're going to have a fun time. Guys, you might be interested in it, too, with those ladies in your life. Take care. Have a great day. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.